Hi, everyone. We've come to the end of season 3 of the podcast. This is our wrap-up episode, a chance for me to talk with the podcast producer, Sophia Snyder, and for us to share a few thoughts about the podcast generally, and especially about this season's guests. We're going to do something a bit different from what we did in the wrap-up episodes for seasons 1 and 2 today, in that we're going to play a couple brief clips from a few of this season's episodes and talk about them. A very, very, very small sampling of things that stood out to us this season. So I want to begin by saying, first of all, a thank you to all of our guests who were just so terrific this year. They always are. We're so grateful to them and for them. And also, I get to say thank you to Sophia here, actually on the podcast recording, for so much good work all year. I say this to people, our guests, this podcast minus Sophia equals no podcast at all. So Sophia, thank you so much for your good work.
Well, it's a privilege to be here. It's fun to be on the other end today.
Yeah. You know, I Sophia's kind of the producer by happy accident. We had, you know, seasons 1 and 2, we had a couple great producers, Sam Jacob and Abby Thatcher. And we had also the Humanities Center assistants, Brooke Brown and Bobby May, who were playing producer. And they were great at this. I had a producer lined up for season 3. And then the last minute, she learned she could not do it.
Yeah.
I was like, oh no. So I went to our friend Andy Reid, and he said, I've got a student who might be good. Anyway, it's Sophia, who's been just terrific.
Well, I'm sad for that student, but I'm happy that I get to be here.
Right, you've been great. So, I mean, brief conversation before we get to these clips here. I guess the first question is, I'm going to assume the answer here is no, but had you heard about this podcast before you began producing it?
The podcast was new to me, but I had heard of you and the work that you were doing with spirituality and literature.
Okay. Once you heard the podcast, heard some episodes of this, when you were contemplating even be a part of it or not, were you surprised by it in any way, or given its description, is it what you expected to hear?
I think it was pretty much what I expected to hear. You referenced earlier kind of the serendipitous way that I came to be the producer of the podcast. I had just gotten home from spending a bit of my summer in England studying interfaith relations at the Wolfe Institute at Cambridge. And I remember coming home and I was thinking a little bit more about my educational plans and what I wanted to pursue. And I don't know if I told you this, but I spent one Sunday fasting and praying about what I should be looking to pursue. And the next morning I woke up to an email in my inbox, which was your name asking if I would be interested in coming to produce a podcast. And so I think my expectations coming to this were, it just felt like it fit. It's very, very aligned with my interests. And so I was just expecting fantastic things, and listening to the episodes, the quality of the guests was just so apparent, and I just felt really excited to be a part of this. So Faith and Imagination felt like a very, very providential name.
I'm so glad. And the guests are great. We've always been really, really blessed by the great guests that come on here. I'm curious, so producing the podcast, sometimes you have more turnaround time, sometimes less turnaround time, and there can be some pressure, you know, getting it produced, like to drop on the usual Mondays. I'm curious whether there were things that you found either especially rewarding and or challenging about working on the podcast.
Yeah, for challenging, I think the most challenging thing has honestly been picking some clips for today for the episode. It's been it's been a very, very rewarding experience. Even with the quick turnaround times, I've really, really enjoyed just getting to re-listen to the episodes. And I feel like there's certainly been things that guests have said or that you've said on episodes that have been what I needed to hear. And so I've really appreciated the opportunity to go back to listen to them and to let the Spirit speak to me a little bit through that.
That's great. That's great.
Matt, I'm curious. So this is your first year hosting the podcast after having served as the founding director of the Humanities Center for 10 years. However, you've kept very busy this year with lots of traveling for conferences and speaking opportunities. What has been the value for you of continuing to record these episodes, and what value do you hope has been communicated to our listeners this season?
That latter one is a hard one for me to answer. I mean, what's being communicated to listeners? I mean, I suppose I too am a listener on the podcast, and we get these guests and I engage them in conversation. And what I'm doing largely is listening to them talk about their perspective, their work, their insights. I know that what's communicated to me, the value to me as a listener, is just the quality of the both the insights that are intellectual that our guests have. Many are such accomplished scholars with so much understanding of the things that they're discussing here in the podcast. But they're also often people whose faith perspectives bring so much to me. It feels kind of multidimensional to me in that respect. I mean, I've been a scholar for just about a quarter century, and had a job at BYU for 23 years now, and I love being a scholar. But the people I talk to on the podcast are people of faith, as well as, in most cases, people of faith, as well as people who are very fine scholars. Mm-hmm. And so that is what I have loved about the podcast. I find them inspiring. You know, the people we talk to are just, they're inspiring to me, both intellectually, but also they give me better ways to imagine how I want to live, you know, how I want to be in the world. So that's the value of maintaining the podcast. I'd thought I'd do this for a couple of years, the last couple of years in the Humanities Center, and be done. But I found I didn't want to stop because it brought too much to me just to want to put it away. Mm. Well, how would you answer your own question? Like what this brings to listeners? And because you've had to listen to these a couple, to produce them, you hear them both when they're being recorded, then you hear them when you're producing them. Would you add anything to what I said?
I definitely agree on the inspiration front. I think that what value this podcast has, I think it's such important work that people who are thinking about spirituality, thinking about theology, thinking about the humanities in this way are coming together and having this shared connection across broad traditions, across lots of different fields, lots of different areas. And I think it's important for us to allow what they say to touch us, even if we're not coming from the same places. And so that's been rewarding for me, and I certainly hope it has been for our listeners as well.
Yeah, me too. Yeah, thank you.
So taking all the things that have happened this season, if you were to sum up what you think might be a couple of the main themes, what would you say they are?
That is a good question. It's a hard one to answer. I mean, the big themes are usually, to do with podcast title, Faith and Imaginations. How do we imagine the life of faith in the world? How do we imagine the life of faith in the intellectual or academic world? How do we imagine the life of faith in the lives that we live? Themes that touch on religion, theology, spirituality are the broad themes. But there have been, I think some through line themes here, a couple of them. I find that over the various seasons, one of the recurring themes has been like the importance of understanding the natural world and the importance of spiritual life to being able to understand how best to engage and preserve the natural world. John Gatta spoke to this. Chad Thralls speaks to this, for example. Another theme that came through is the importance of the arts and humanities and poetry. I mean, Micah Maddox and Sally Thomas spoke to this. We had some poets that we also talked to. Sally Reed, is here talking about her poetry, beautiful poetry. Christina Gomez-Fernandez talking about the poetry of Denise Levertov. That, for me, was a theme to a couple of these episodes. Contemplative life and what that means for how we write, how we read, how we understand literary traditions. Joshua Wren spoke to that, I think, so beautifully. So did Stephanie Paulsell speak to this. I've got a lot from these guests in terms of things I want to teach. Selfishly, it's been beneficial to me also to listen to these. These are themes that I've seen. There are others too, kind of these sort of sub-themes. Have you noticed any as you've thought about the podcast this season?
Yeah, I would certainly echo all the ones that you said. I think a large one was contemplation for me. I think a lot of different guests talked about the importance of sitting in contradiction, sitting in silence, letting God speak to you in those moments. And so that was something big that I'm taking away.
Oh, fantastic. Those are really, really key themes. Maybe we turn now to a couple of clips that we have prepared. Shall we do that?
Yeah.
Let me start one. This was an episode where we talked to Barbara Quinn. Let's play that clip, then we'll talk about it for a second, okay, Sophia?
Sounds great.
So the language of the spirit, and I've been very influenced by Jules Toner, a Jesuit who died several years ago, but he was a real giant in the whole area of discernment. And he talks about it in this way. We are whole people. So God's Spirit's going to work through head, heart, and our action, our bodies. And so it's a matter of learning how to read the language of the Spirit in our heads. If it's of God, it will be true and clear, truth and clarity. If it's not of God, there will be, at least until it comes, a falsehood and a confusion. In our affect, if we're of God, there will be a kind of joy and peace in a very deep way, not superfluous or superficial. And if we're not of God, then there will be a kind of turmoil and a sadness. And we all know that. And in our actions, same thing. If it's of God and if it's of our true selves, we'll know a courage and energy to do what needs to be done, even if it's hard. And if it's not of God or it's not time, there will be a fear and a paralysis. That schema, to me, really catches our life. And I think that if we can apply that also to our learning, when something jars the mind, are we willing and able to say, let's stay with it until we find out what that's about, until it leads us to peace and joy or to courage and energy?
All right. Barbara Quinn is just such a fantastic human being. I've met her at conferences, and we've served together on the board. She was the president of the Society for the Study of Christian Spirituality. I love Barb Quinn. You know, there's a passage in the Doctrine and Covenants, a book that Latter-day Saints receive as scripture, that describes the effects of the Spirit of God when it acts on us. And there you read that if something is of the Spirit, we feel a surge of good feeling and like an amplification of the intellect. If something is not of the Spirit, however, we feel what scripture describes as a stupor of thought. I love how Barb expands on this spiritual insight, right? She connects our experience of the Spirit of God with impressions of truth and clarity, feelings of joy and peace, whereas when something is not of God, it brings a sense of falsehood and feelings of turmoil and sadness. The words she attached to that amplified, expanded my own vocabulary for thinking about what those things mean and my own kind of scriptural familiarity with that idea. And what's more, this is really important, she recognizes that the Spirit of God often pushes us to consider what is uncomfortable to us, right? That there's a real rigor to spiritual experience, that it works against our confirmation biases. This rings true to me, even though it isn't an easy thought. It's not easy on me as a thought. The purpose of spiritual experience, as Barb's describing it here, is to bring us closer to God. That requires us to stretch and grow, not to rest in what we currently believe or in who we currently are and how we think and how we experience the world. I love those thoughts on what it means really to learn the language of the Spirit.
Yeah, absolutely. That passage from Doctrine and Covenants came to my mind as well as we listened. And it also reminded me quite a bit of your work that you published this past year, which is entitled Life to the Whole Being. And she uses the phrase, we are the whole people. So she describes this feeling of either courage or energy when things are from God, or fear and paralysis when maybe they're not. And I'm curious for what you'd have to say about the space where maybe you don't feel either of those things, but silence might be what you're feeling from God.
What a good question. Doesn't it kind of come back to what you said earlier about that contemplative space where you learn to sit with things that don't yield immediate answers? And you learn to sit with what feels at first like conflict, contradiction, or just silence. But as you sit, and sometimes sitting can mean literal sitting or in prayer or just meditation, but sitting can also mean living your life and going about, you know, your business, but letting things be without having to sort of find immediate closure. That, I think, can reveal not just sometimes things that we might see or hear or discern that we might not immediately understand, but it also, I think, can reveal to us that some things are just more complex and that God answers certain things in time as a way of revealing to us not just what impressions or answers might be, but also that the thing about which we're pondering is itself an object of many parts, or a problem that's multifaceted. So that's what I think of. Is that, does that ring true to you?
Yeah, absolutely. I think both you and Barbara Quinn speak beautifully to that.
So what do you have for us here? What's your first clip? It's almost impossible, right, to do this.
It's true.
But one that you wanted to sort of bring back for our discussion today.
Yeah, it was hard, I will say. I think the first one I'm going to pull back is from Daniel Train. It's a clip where he's speaking about the distinction between the explanation and the experience of art and theology or God. So here it is.
What I think is really interesting about your colleague's statement is that, one, she's, art is an area where she's learned or has been willing not to sort of control the sort of outcome, right? Which is how typically I think most of, especially in the university and kind of scholarly fields, like that's what we need to do, is sort of control the outcome and define it, which is also a way of saying that she senses in art this lack of this need or this willingness to suspend a sense of reducing something into, you know, some words that she can kind of wrap that up with. And so in that sense, I very much think, you know, that distinction she makes between experience and explanation is terrific. On the other hand, I'd also say not all explanations are reductive.
Yeah.
So you had teachers, and I've had teachers, where you walk up to a poem or a story or a film and you go, I didn't get it. And then a few lines in, they say, look at this. Do you hear this? Look, there's like three levels of meaning here. And suddenly you go, oh. And that's an explanation that sort of takes you in deeper, and suddenly, and, you know, so it's a really helpful way. So I say that in part because I do the work of theology, and people often think of theology as a kind of explanation of God. And that what we need to do is get away from explaining God and merely experience God. And I want to say, I understand that, but I think there are also explanations that are not reductive, that will hopefully, if done well, done artistically through the arts, will actually foster experience of God, not sort of reduce God to something I can control.
Okay, that's a great clip. I love that clip from Daniel Train. So what made you choose that one?
Oh, so many reasons. Something that I've really appreciated about the podcast this year is I feel like it's coalesced really interestingly and provocatively with a lot of the classes that I've been taking this semester. So when we were recording this episode, I was sitting behind the soundboard, and this particular quote from Daniel Train actually inspired what is now one of my final papers for my theory class on performativity. And so I've been thinking personally a lot about theory of performativity, which was a term coined by J.L. Austin, which essentially talks about speech acts. So meaning when you say or when you utter something, that uttering itself is the act. So when I say, I bet you this, or I promise this, or even I do in a marriage, you are actually betting or promising or marrying. And so Daniel Train's thought on the explanation of God as the power to be the experience of God, I thought was extremely provocative, and it's what I've been writing my final paper on. Because I've personally found in a lot of different ways, hearing someone or reading something that might be construed as the explanation of God has not just been an explanation, has not just been consultative, but has given me an experience with him. And so I appreciated Daniel's words and thoughts to that effect.
Yeah, that's great, Sophia. That would be a great paper too. That's one I'd actually want to read. I do not say that about all student papers, but that one sounds great. Was something else you said that I thought was really good was near the beginning of that clip, a bit about art allowing us to sort of experience something without trying to control the outcome. You know, something that art does famously is it makes us really stop and pause and attend to what we are engaging, whether it's a work of fine art, a sculpture, a poem, a novel, whatever this may, artwork, maybe a piece of music, and just to take it in and try to understand it on its own terms. And often in art, that means understanding things or experiencing things we had not anticipated. Art doesn't exist only to gratify what we want to hear, but it exists in some ways to call that into question. In that respect, art is also a great way to learn how to cultivate the capacity to sit in complexity without having to sort of find immediate answers. So back to your earlier question, mm-hmm. you know, about how it is you know, that we can experience complex things or exist with complex things. One answer might be learn how to better engage works of art. Let's go. I've got one more clip for us here. Again, this is impossible. I could pull out multiple clips from every single episode that we produced this year. But here's one more that kind of put its finger on something that's been on my mind a lot. And when this person said this, I thought, yeah, that resonates for lots of reasons. This is Zachary Davis.
But something that had been on my mind for quite a while is just how important the metaphors we use to describe what our religious and spiritual lives look like or ought to look like. And for a while now, I had felt that when I was growing up, I was presented with a model of faith that was something you could hold. Mm. You could gain faith. You could hold faith. You could lose faith. And it could function kind of like a binary. It was on or off. Mm-hmm. But as I had experienced life and gone through my own journey of faith, I started increasingly thinking of faith as a journey. And a journey is not something you can lose. It's something that you're on and that you're experiencing and that you're interpreting.
Okay, I wish a moment here of self-criticism. I wish I had not gone in the middle of that clip. But you could see in that moment, I was kind of thinking to myself, oh, that's a good
that's
point.
Good.
These two metaphors of faith, one is object, one is journey. Let me say here, this is a difficult era for institutions of all kinds in kind of the Western world, including institutional religion, right? We live very much in an anti-institutional age. So faith crises, as we often call them, seem really very, very common, even rampant, if you want to put it in those kinds of terms. But Zach suggests here that part of the problem may be definitional, right? That as long as we think of faith as an object, it's something easily lost. But the journey metaphor of faith affords a different and a longer perspective. It's a richer way for us to consider our experience. And this, I think, is important not only for organized religions, maybe to kind of think of faith in those more journeyfied terms. It's also important for individuals, right? Because if people think of faith as an object and they've lost it, they make certain decisions, kind of snap decisions about things, snap judgments. But if you can think about your spiritual path across a longer time frame, I think it's easier to stay with things. It's easier to wait on things. It's easier to both expect and get through rough patches along the way so that difficult times aren't moments when you're losing your faith. Rather, they're part of the cost of gaining wisdom. And this enriches, I think, how we imagine faith. So I thought that, you know, for a podcast titled Faith and Imagination, mm-hmm. that was an awfully lucid way of Zach's to think about faith.
I like that. And I appreciate your description as well. I think that journey brings to mind this idea of an eventual arrival, and that presumes that you won't be there for a while, and that's okay.
Yeah, exactly right. That's mm-hmm. great. Good observation. Thank you, Sophia.
Great. Okay. Are we on to the last clip?
Yeah, last clip.
Okay.
You got it.
I'm going to take us to Joshua Wren. And in the clip that we're pulling from, he is commenting on a phrase from his book that's about contemplative realism, and he's remarking on the state of our hearts as affecting our sight.
Joseph Pieper, who is really important in this book, you know, sets the tone by saying that in our time, man's ability to see is in decline. Yeah. So our on the one hand, we have all of these things that are promising us a greater ability to connect and to be able to have an increased access to the world. But a lot of those things just end up giving us more kind of blinders and reduce our ability to see because, you know, as Romano Guardini says, the roots of the eye are in the heart. And so what we're able to see and what we're not able to see has a lot to do with the states of our hearts, the states of our souls, more than it does to, you know, our optical nerves or something like that, you know. And so, but for the one who has love in their heart, right? For the one who has the lover's gaze, a lover can never see enough of the beloved. Right? Never. You could never see enough of the beloved. That would be that's an impossible. If you've seen enough of your beloved, then you're no longer a lover, right? And so the desire to see enough is therefore never satisfied. And it leaves you in this state of constant wide-eyed gaze, right? Just in love with the real, because it's a gift, right? Seeing it as gift is hugely important for the contemplative realist.
Yeah, that was great.
Yeah, I had a hard time picking what part to pull from this episode. But I just think that that's so incredibly beautiful. The idea that for the one who has a lover's heart, a lover's gaze, you can never see enough of the beloved. And I also really liked the idea that our sight is affected by the state of our heart and the state of our souls. And I feel like I've certainly found that to be true in my own life. When my heart is hard or it's set on something and I have a really strong will about what's going to happen and I'm unwilling to change direction, then I feel like it is harder for me to see the way forward sometimes. And I've also noticed that when my heart is softened and when I say thy will be done, it's a lot easier to see what I feel like God has in store for me in the future. But it just comes, it's hard. It's hard to soften your heart. But it's always something that I've looked back on and been grateful for when I've had those moments.
Yeah, that's I mean, that's a lot of wisdom in there, what you just said and what he said. Mm-hmm. And I think it goes back again to learning how to sit in complexity. So this really is a theme of the year, yeah. Isn't it? I mean, that sitting in complexity being a way for us to readjust our expectations, soften our hearts, to become more open to what God may want to communicate that we may not have been quite so open to hearing right away. Right, for whatever reason, that idea that our ability, what Joshua Wren just said, our ability to see being in decline, that we have increased access, you know, through information, you know, channels to all kinds of things around the world, but that in some ways these channels of access can also create blinders. I think that's awfully profound. Of course, that idea about the lover's gaze, you know, a relational way to understand God, God not as object, but God really as being or person with whom one is in relation. That explains kind of my interest in, you know, spiritual life very much. That's a great clip. Thank you, Sophia. So here we are at the end of this season. I want to say thank you again, Sophia, for the excellent work that you have done. Looking forward to season 4, you know, on the podcast. Hopefully you'll be the producer. And if you decide not to be, that I won't find out 1 week before the semester begins, that you can't.
I'll do my best.
Yeah, no, but yeah, anyway, thank you so much.
Well, I'm incredibly grateful to you, Matt, and to all of our guests as well. It's been a fantastic season. We'd like to thank all of our wonderful guests during season 3 of our Faith and Imagination podcast. In chronological order, we thank Matthew Crosman, Jessica Houghton-Wilson, John Gatta, Andrew Prevo, Christina Gomez-Fernandez, Douglas Christie, Micah Maddox, Sally Thomas, George Hanley, Joshua Wren, Russ Ramsey, Barbara Quinn, Sally Reed, Jennifer Frey, Douglas Hardy, Leonard McMahon, Daniel Train, Stephanie Paulsell, Zachary Davis, and Chad Thralls. We'd also like to thank you, our listeners, and hope you'll join us next season on the Faith and Imagination podcast.